Very well, that's an additional 2 minutes.
Good morning. Please report. Appellant would have the court sustain her objection to the application of Federal Circuit holding in Richland in this case and grant her petition for fees simply because she billed a portion of her fees at a reduced rate, ostensibly at a paralegal rate. However, she incorrectly asserts that because she's an attorney and not a paralegal, she should be reimbursed as an attorney and that she's entitled to $110 an hour for the paralegal work that she performed. She also claims that, or he, Mr. Aponte, claims that if Richland controls in this case, it would, quote, create precisely the negative policy impact that Richland sought to avoid by prohibiting recovery altogether. Well, that may be the case in this particular case because she didn't actually hire a paralegal, but that's not what the secretary is suggesting, nor is it what will hold for future cases, because I think it becomes clear that this court needs to establish guidelines or parameters for the cost of paralegal services.
Does that mean that this court also has to define in every case what is a paralegal service and what is a gray area service and what is an attorney service?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. I think that's been somewhat laid out by the case law. I mean, the court does have discretion and the court is required to assess whether the time expended is reasonable and whether it is tasks. But I think that the burden is on the appellant.
Wouldn't most of the tasks that are claimed as paralegal tasks here qualify as gray area or attorney work?
No, I wouldn't say that's not the case. Certainly the table of contents could be defined as clerical work.
What about a synopsis of medical records?
Well, I'm not sure how that is different than reviewing the records. I mean, if you look at the actual hours claimed, the synopsis follows multiple reviews and I believe an actual further evaluation. But in any case, I suppose depending on what that actually entails, but a synopsis of the medical records, from what I would understand it to be, is just to look and see what medical records are here and what they actually entail. I don't know that that's attorney work. Certainly it needs to be performed by someone who can read the records and perhaps understand. But I don't think, and that's not the point of Richland. In Richland controlling here, I believe.
What about checking case sites, counsel?
What does that?
Would that be a gray area?
No,
duty,
I believe
or?
That would be, that's outlined as a paralegal task. Well, at least it's referenced in appellant supplemental, where they indicate that paralegal site checking would be more experienced than an entry-level paralegal.
Didn't the Supreme Court in Jenkins clearly say that site checking was one of those gray area duties, tasks?
In Jenkins, well,
I refer you to footnote 10.
In Jenkins, Your Honor?
That's correct.
I know that Jenkins identified.
The court there lists such work, meaning either paralegal tasks or under the supervision of an attorney or otherwise might be performed by a lawyer, to include factual investigation, locating, interviewing witnesses, assistance with depositions, interrogatories, document production, etc., compilation of statistical and financial data, checking legal citations, drafting correspondence.
Yes.
So does the fact that the appellant's attorney chose to call those paralegal tasks and thus bill at a reduced rate for services performed by the attorney, does that somehow turn them into expenses? Is that the argument?
The argument is that they were billed as paralegal hours. They're billed as paralegal tasks. And
So you would say that once an attorney says that something is a paralegal task, they're then bound by that statement in terms of whether they can expense it or whether they can request a reduced rate fee?
I believe subsequent to Richland, or this certainly the secretary does, subsequent to Richland, yes, that's the case. Once the time is billed as, well, it kind of actually been billed as paralegal fees, but in the instant case, because Mr. Aponte's attorney chose to bill the time as paralegal tasks, then under Richland, they need to be costed. They're part of the expense of the litigation. They're not.
But when asked to clarify that subsequent to Richland, when this court asked the parties to clarify their stance, at that point, the appellant's attorney said, well, that's work that I performed. I chose to bill it at a lower rate. Isn't that what is contemplated by EJA?
Well,
billing judgment?
Billing judgment, yes, to some extent, but I don't believe that it's contemplated that you bill an attorney at a reduced fee. If the work is a paralegal, if the work that's performed is work that is paralegal work, then it becomes expensed and it's part of the cost of the litigation. And just because a private practitioner, a solo practitioner, chooses not to hire a paralegal and performs a task himself or herself, that does not mean that they're billed at an attorney's rate. And clearly in Richland, they become billed as part of the cost of the litigation.
How do we address the comment made by appellant's counsel that how can they be reimbursed for a cost when they don't have an actual cost? When we pay expenses like postage, we're paying an actual postage amount or copying fee or whatever. But there is no actual cost.
Oh, I understand. And that in this particular case makes it difficult because the court could rule either way. They could hold it to a strict Richland standard and say, since there were no paralegal costs, they don't recover. But again, that's not what we're suggesting. It's not what the secretary is suggesting. I believe the secretary believes what the court needs to do is look at what the reasonable rate would be for paralegal costs and expense, and consider that an expense in this particular case and apply that.
And the secretary's advocated that we use the government salary wage for a paralegal.
That's the secretary's suggestion, just simply because that's what is we pay. And again, to bring the court back to the point of EJA, it's not to fully reimburse the attorneys. It's the point of
that is true with regard to the attorney fee, but with regard to costs, we pay actual costs. You know, we don't pay 80% of postage, we pay 100% of postage. So if the market rate for a private paralegal would be higher than a government employee that has other benefits that accrue to them due to government service, wouldn't that be a more appropriate rate to look to?
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. But again, Richland determined that it was not the market rate. It's actually the cost to the attorney.
Well, no, but what they paid was a private market rate for hiring a contractor, for a paralegal, not for what they bill the paralegal as.
Apparently, I know that the appeals board took judicial notice from the internet, and that's where they came up with the $35 an hour. And the secretary is not trying to establish what the rate should be. We simply submitted the GS scale as what
helpful.
Submitted an affidavit that said, in the exercise of my billing judgment, I reduced this 14.6, let's use that number, by 50%. So I'm billing at the attorney rate for 7 hours because I'm going to let go of this other 7 hours. Would the I get into this collage of whether or not it's secretarial work or paralegal work or attorney's work. It's just whether or not this fee that goes to this attorney is a reasonable fee, as I see. And I'm just throwing that out as a suggestion, I guess, in terms of dealing with the records of this thing, not only here but also in the future.
I don't think the secretary, pardon me, would oppose that per se. It's looking at the totality of the petition and whether the fees are reasonable. And certainly we look at the no charge, and there were significant hours, not charged, but there are also significant hours billed in terms of the entire petition.
Totally apart from the paralegal versus attorney task issue, in the broader issue here that council addressed last, with regard to the reasonableness of the request for reimbursement, address that for us, if you would, please. What makes this an unreasonable request?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the total number of hours billed and the totality of the circumstances of the case, the facts of the case, it became a joint remand. And I know that counsel, Mr. Aponte, in his response, indicated that the secretary was not amenable to a remand and basically maneuvered, but that's not the case. We discussed a remand. It was always on the table.
But there is an email in here that says that you thought that it was best, or the government's attorney, whoever that was, thought that it was best that the appellant submit a brief.
Only because it was in the interest of time. Appellant's counsel was approaching her deadline. I don't recall exactly. Apparently she wasn't comfortable taking any extension, and I was not prepared to commit the secretary to a remand without having fully...
Well, then, assuming the council has some concern with the guidelines that this court sets with regard to timely filing and is attempting to operate within the court's rules with regard to filing, and one party says to the other party, you ought to go ahead and file your brief, and the party does so, doesn't it seem unfair to then say that attorney is not entitled to reimbursement for the time spent in constructing the brief?
Oh, yes. And, Your Honor, that's not what the secretary is saying. The secretary...
Well, that is what the secretary... I don't mean to argue with you, counsel, but that is what the secretary said in the first response here, that this was a case disposed of by joint remand, and therefore... other expenses ought not to be reimbursed.
Well,
am I mischaracterizing it? I'm more than willing to be corrected.
I'm not sure. I thought the secretary was saying that the overall amount of time spent was unreasonable, not the fact that the appellant filed a brief, but that the time expended on the issues, which were of relative simplicity, and that actually the brief, all the facts of the brief became remand. But I don't believe that the secretary was saying that counsel shouldn't be reimbursed, not at all. I mean, it's just that it was unreasonable. And in speaking to that, I could draw the court's attention to various cases, particularly a mem deck case from lost the site, but in as a point of reference, it was a fully litigated case, and there was a single judge decision, and that attorney billed, I think, 43 hours, and the fee was perhaps $4,000 or $5,000. Just as a point of reference. Looking at...
Counsel, I appreciate you trying to give us some parameters. However, without knowing the complexities of the case involved, it's a little bit of apples and oranges for us.
I understand that. So I can bring the court back to this case, which was an increased rating and medical records that were obtained that the appellant identified, and contemporaneous examination. There was no real complex reason to research and review
what's his page worth?
Oh, I don't know, Your Honor. I mean, it was remanded based on those factors, whether he gets an increase. He has, one leg was rated at 20%, the other leg was rated at 10%.
And the second thing that bothers me about this a little bit, I guess, is that we're talking about penalizing the taxpayer, basically, is what this amounts to. After the brief was filed, the work was performed, the decision was made basically to enter into the joint remand.
Yes, sir.
Right. And that decision been made prior to the briefing conference or the settlement conference, it seems to me that we wouldn't be here today talking about the taxpayer dollar. So I suggest that we all take these settlement conferences very seriously, because I think they have tremendous implications in the future.
I believe that we do, Your Honor, and I certainly do take them seriously. But at the same time, certainly that's the point of each is taxpayer interest. And when we're talking about reimbursing an attorney for paralegal tasks, that also goes to the taxpayer. I mean, why should the taxpayer be burdened with a cost of $110 per hour when Richland has clearly said it's not a fee? And with respect to the facts of this case, I'm speaking for myself as an attorney. I do take briefing conferences very seriously, but I also take my responsibility in representing the secretary very seriously. And
well, that wasn't a personal criticism. That was just.
Oh, I understand, but I want to make sure that you understand. This was not. There were some allegations in an appellant's response about the secretary's maneuvering and positioning, and that's never been the case. It was simply a matter of logistics and available time and adhering to the court's deadlines that prevented further evaluation prior to the briefing. But again, appellant's brief became the joint motion. So those facts were all included in the joint motion. So it wasn't wasted time in that respect.
I guess the thing that teed that up for me, counsel, was the statement in the secretary's response in opposition to the appellant's application. This is, the secretary contends that the appellant has failed to meet his burden of demonstrating his fee of $13,841 for an 8-page uncontested joint remand is reasonable. That appears in retrospect to be an oversimplification, I guess. There was more involved here than an 8-page joint motion.
Well, but the majority of that motion, Your Honor, were facts. And in the interest of not further extending the time, the secretary accepted the facts as appellant had provided and basically just made sure that the secretary's interests were protected and went forward with the remand. But again, I would bring the court back to the substance of the case and complexity and the basic issues that this court needs to look at in terms of whether the fee is reasonable. And I would say, the secretary would say on its face, $13,000 for a joint remand is rather extreme. And again, I know apples and oranges, but I've settled cases that have been fully litigated for
Let's not get too far afield here, counsel.
But in terms of the secretary's opposition, Your Honor, I wanted to bring it back to Judge Lance's position that it's the taxpayer who we need to keep in mind.
Well, let's get right to that point then. What is the secretary's bottom line here with regard to this area of paralegal duties, billing, this 14.6 hours out of all the rest of this stuff that you want to focus on? And as I understand it, if you look at the GS rate which ranges from $22 to $29 or $26 an hour. And if you were to add in the cost to the government of federal matching and the contribution to retirement, which is a real budget number, that comes up to about $29 to $36. And if you look at Richland, it's $35. And if you say it's $35, which is what I think the appellant came up with in her informal survey, appellant's attorney, $35.17, I think the figure was. Tell me why we're not sitting here arguing about 17 cents.
Your Honor, the Secretary is willing to consider or accept whatever this court determines is a reasonable amount. But the Secretary's only position here is that Richland applies, that it's precedential. It applies for paralegal tasks, regardless of who performs them. And there's certainly case law to that point, and Richland was very clear, and there's also Supreme Court, I believe it was in the Jenkins case referred to it, but in the Johnson v. Georgia Highway Express, the case that counsel cited as having been overturned by the Supreme Court, it was actually abrogated but on different grounds. The premise that the substance of the work performed, not the occupation of the worker, still stands.
I'd like to turn back to that point, please. If the court were to create a rule or that for solo practitioners performing work that was paralegal in nature, it had to be billed at a different rate or whatever, can you give us some guidance on how the court can determine what is paralegal and what is not?
Well, I believe, as Judge Moore said, it's already, the Supreme Court has addressed it somewhat in Jenkins, and it's up, the court has a discretion. I would say that the burden is on the appellant to explain why it's a paralegal task or why it's not a paralegal task. And then,
or would the burden be on the secretary to say it's not an attorney task?
If the appellant has met his or her burden of the first three elements of establishing that the EJA is warranted, then only if the secretary takes issue or contests the way it's billed would it then become the secretary's burden. But ultimately, it's the court's discretion to determine what rate applies. And the secretary, again, is not here to say this is what you should do. We simply submitted the GS scale as an assistance, as something to look at. If the court chooses to accept the rates that were submitted by appellate, the temporary agency, the secretary is amenable to that. The only concern is the overhead and what's built into it. But again, the whole objective here of PETA is to reimburse the council, and the secretary is not opposed to that. It's not to make the appellant whole. It's simply to deter litigants, to allow litigants to go forward when there's questionable government action. And to keep that happening is the point of the EJA. It's not to reimburse an attorney for performing clerical secretarial paralegal tasks. So that's the secretary's position.
I'd just like to pursue one more thing. If we were to try and figure out what the actual costs to Mr. Aponte's attorney for doing these tasks, as opposed to what costs would be if they had hired an outsider, and if that turned out to be a higher rate than $35 or whatever the cost to contract with someone would be, would that be an appropriate rate? You know, if we figured out what her rent was and how much her take-home salary was or whatever figures were used to somehow compute what her actual costs were.
Certainly, if the court deems that the actual cost. I mean, it really isn't, the secretary's not trying to determine what the actual cost
okay.
is. Simply that in this case, that Richland controls and across the board, that it's not limited to just because, not limited to actual paralegals, and that it's
So from the secretary, just to wrap up, so the secretary's perspective then, as I understand it, you would say that the key here is for the court to determine what is a paralegal task and what is not?
No, well, if you need to do that in the process, but you're on the secretary actually saying that Richland applies and that what counsel has already billed as paralegal tasks are paralegal tasks, accept them as paralegal tasks, and determine accordingly how to apply Richland and assign an appropriate rate that can be expensed.
No further questions. Thank you.
What's at stake in this case? What's at stake is an increased rating above 20% for one leg, 10% for the other. But in reviewing the brief, I would also argue that this employee is, this veteran, is in sheltered employment, and there may be a TDIU issue as well wrapped up in this when it goes back down. So what's at stake could be significant. With respect to the paralegal issue and how that should be approached by the court, sole practitioner in this case did all the work in this case. She decided to review the entire fee petition at the time, and she reduced a substantial number of hours, no charge the number of hours. And with respect to these tasks that she performed, which are in the gray area, and I think that's what Jenkins refers to, she reduced her rate, and she should be billed and receive fees at that rate. If the court finds that this is something that should be expensed, and we would suggest that the $35 an hour is our best estimate at what the actual expense would have been had she been able to hire someone to do these particular tasks. If there's no other questions,
further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted for consideration. The court before adjourning will come down and greet counsel.